the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960.
Home, your trailer, your horse trailer, your hot rod, your race car, blah, 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 blah. Anything you want to talk about with respect to cars. Maybe even if you were looking for a used car and you wanted me to compare a couple of them. And that's kind of important because it's very difficult for you to say, I want a midsize SUV because, you know, there's, what, 680 models of cars and SUVs out there. So it's nice if you narrow it down. My husband likes the Murano and I like the 4Runner and that kind of stuff. That works well and I can talk. And you guys, most of the time I'm going to side with the wife just for my personal safety. So that, I just warn you in advance that I have a bad habit of siding with the wife. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my buddy Bob Jones at Quality Transmission. Not too long ago, I didn't hear this from Bob, but not too long ago there was a paint and body shop that had a problem with a car, and the car didn't shift right after they had done a significant amount of work to it. So they were real concerned. So they took the car to a local transmission shop, and the local transmission shop quoted, I don't know, $800 for a TCM, and that's a transmission control module. Otherwise, it's the computer that controls, it watches engine, and then it makes the transmission do what it wants to do based on what the engine's doing and what the speed of the vehicle's doing. So the paint and body shop, for whatever reason, decided, let's get a second opinion. So they took it over to Quality Transmission, and Quality Transmission replaced a fuse and gave it back and said, there you go. Now, they didn't know at the time that someone else had diagnosed it as a TCM. Later, I heard that, and I was able to verify that. And then I asked what I thought was a really important question to Bob. Bob, when you did that, what'd you charge the body shop? And he looked at me with the face that your father would look at you when you ask an incredibly stupid question, and he said, nothing. It didn't take but a minute. So I looked up the process when you have your car stuck in default mode, which is one gear forward and reverse, that's all. And the very first thing it says in there is check the fuse. So that's an important consideration. Wherever you do work, make sure that they have the skills and have the knowledge to identify your problem, diagnose it correctly, and then bid the repair. In that case, the repair was zero. I'm pretty sure the body shop was pretty happy. Quality Transmission, been in the East Valley since 1977. And I know you'll be happy if you use Quality Transmission on Hayden Road or McClintock, just south of the 202 and north of University. All righty. I have a car for sale. And I know you find this unusual, but this car is a one-of-a-kind car. And those of you that are into Corvettes, or if you want a Corvette that is second to no one in your club, let me describe a car. It's a 2006 Z06 with an LS7 motor. And what that means to all of you that don't know what that means this is a real fast car. Now, in addition to it be black on black, black exterior, black interior, it has a 6-speed and it's loaded to the gills with all the computerized everything. It has 18,000 miles on this 9-year-old car. 9-year-old car. 18,000 miles. Now, about 2 years ago, we installed twin turbos on this LS7 Z06 Corvette. And I had an opportunity to drive it the other day for the first time because the owner wants to sell it. And I want to tell you, I could never really own this car because I'll die in it, because it is so stupid fast. Now, I'm going to tell you that on a racetrack environment, as I accelerated through first gear and I approached 80 miles an hour, when the turbos kicked in on at about 4,800, and it's on a 7,000 RPM red line, so on the RPM, on the tachometer, 7,000, it turns red, so at about 4,800, the turbos kick in, and the back end got loose at about 85 miles an hour. I mean, and then the traction control kicked in and straightened me out. So in a race environment, this has 243 rear gears in it, which means it should be capable, based on a 7,000 redline, of, I mean, if you were stupid enough to drive it, it'd be well over 160 miles an hour. But this car is so fast that I can't imagine anybody wanting this for anything other than a trophy or a trailer queen. Its stock is 550 horsepower. So I don't care what you give me on top of 550 horsepower for a twin turbo setup, but if you'd be kind, you'd give me 100-150 horses and maybe even more than that. But if you gave me 150 horses on a 550, then if my math's right, this thing's pushing 700 horsepower. And I've driven lots of cars. I had the opportunity to drive NASCARs around the track in Las Vegas. I've had opportunities to drive fast cars. Now, I've never driven a dragster like John Force has, that goes through the quarter mile at 300 miles an hour. I've never had that opportunity, and I don't think I would want to. But this is the fastest car. Now, the price. The low book is $42,000. That's the low book with no twin turbos, no special wheels, no tires, and that includes the 18,000 miles. And the owner's asking $52,000. And he, even in spite of the fact that it was $18,000 to put the twin turbos on it, to reprogram the computer, and to put the tires and wheels on it. So $52,000, $42,000. So he's asking $52,000. You want to make an offer? You want to drive it? You're going to drive it with me in the car next to you, and I'm going to be holding a taser. And if you make me wet my pants, I'm going to tase you. I just want to tell you that, because this car is that stupid fast. So I told him I would announce that for him, because it's a car I'm proud of. And the reason I'm proud of is because we built it. And the twin turbos at the very back of the car have to create air that goes to the front of the car, to the engine. Now, in a Corvette, you sit in a bathtub, so as you sit in the passenger side, there's this wall there that you have to lift out of. Inside that wall is where we ran the tubes to the front of the car, which is a really ingenious way to do it, but we didn't design it that way. It's the turbo manufacturer did that. And, of course, we're running engine oil to the turbochargers to make sure that they have the appropriate lubricant, and it uses a synthetic oil, but it's just... It's the fastest and the hardest accelerating car I've ever driven in my life. And if I truly owned this car, and if I was 18 or 20 years old, two things would be for sure. There's no street car on the road that I can think of, and I don't care about you Ford guys with your Cobras and all that other kind of stuff. This thing got kicked out of Firebird years ago for running a mid-10 quarter mile, and the guy that was driving it was probably in his 50s, and he told him he didn't know how fast it would go, so he paid his money, he lined up, and then when he got to the end of the drag strip, he was turning around, coming back, there was red lights, they stopped him, and they said, you're an idiot, you're not allowed to drive a car that fast without a roll cage and padding and helmets and fire suit and this and that. He said, I didn't know how fast it was going to go. And he says it was mid-10s. It was a 10.4, a 10.5, a 10.6 quarter mile. And he says, this is what I did. I knew it was going to be sticky, so I put it in second gear to start with. And he says, and I only made one shift, second to third. Now, I want to tell you about the throw on the shifter. The throw on the shifter between first and second gear might be 3 or 4 inches. So this is a real close-ratioed shifter on top of everything else. Those of you that are into hot rods, this is a good car. You want to email me, you're welcome to do that. I can send you pictures and spec sheets. mark@marksalem.com. You won't find me selling anything on the show very often, but this is something special. This is truly something special. All righty. Jeremy, did we find any sounds that would accommodate my next thing?
Why, yes, we did.
Could I hear that sound? Perfect, perfect. Now, that is the sound of something we all recognize, a train. And the person that drives that train is called an engineer. Regardless of what you think engineers do, the real engineers drive that whistle. They drive that train. So last night, I'm talking to a guy who's an engineer, and he has a race car, and this is what he says to me. He says he wants to measure the stoichiometric ratio of his car. Now, let me explain that. 14.7:1 is the stoichiometric ratio of air and fuel for an optimum performing car. That's 14.7 in weight of air to one part of gas. If you go more air, you run lean, and if you go less air, you run rich, but that's the perfect scenario. However, the problem is with the throttle on a car, it's a little difficult to have that all the time. So he asked me if I could measure that, and I said I prefer to measure what's coming out of the tailpipe and tune the motor from what's coming out of the tailpipe up front. So if we're wasting fuel, I got an abundance of fuel coming out of the tailpipe.
2 minutes.
We'll shut the fuel off. If we're running too lean, my HCs are up real high and my CO is real low, then we'll add more fuel and we can accelerate through the dynamometer. He says, oh, I'm looking for somebody who can measure the actual stoichiometric ratio. And I said, well, where would you propose they measure that? And he goes, well, they'd measure it. I said, the problem is the air and the fuel mixes within the intake manifold, so you would have to somehow, after the air comes into the engine and after the fuel is sprayed into the cylinder and the air is there and the cylinder's there, in a millionth of a second, you'd have to measure that mixture before the spark plug ignited it. So what I'm asking you is how are you, Mr. Engineer, going to build something to measure that mixture of air and fuel just before it's ignited? Now, let me give you an example. At 6,000 RPMs, the engine is doing 600 revolutions per second.
1 minute.
And when you measure when the air and the fuel is mixed together, but before it's ignited, it's 1 millionth of a second in time. So I said to him, why don't you tell me how you're going to measure that in the cylinder, which is the only place you can measure it before the spark plug ignites it and blows it all to heck. And he looked at me and he goes, someone can do that. And I said, I hope you find that person. He says, how much is your dyno time? And I said, $10,000 an hour. My wife kicked me under the table. And those of you in business, you understand exactly what I just did. I just priced him out of my market because I don't want to deal with him. But the idea is that he wants his hot rod, his road racing car, to run at 14.7:1. It'll never happen. It'll never happen as long as it has a throttle. A static motor that runs at the same RPM, yes, maybe. But really, the 14.7:1 air ratio, it's affected by humidity, temperature, it's by altitude, by ambient pressure, everything imaginable. So it's difficult, but only he would want something perfect like that. And actually, 14.7:1 would burn up his Ford motor in a heartbeat. So if he gets there, then he'll have a big motor bill. All right, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. I've got my underwear unwound. I'm ready for your calls at 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. As all my shops, I really like all of them. But Kurtz is just somebody who's a little different in this respect. He has a tremendous business sense. And he's a really kind person, and he's a good technician. So his technicians are not likely to snow him about the process of a repair. He's an independent, family-owned auto repair shop that focuses on your cars and focuses on the diagnostics and then the repair and then making sure that they fix what you brought it in for. In 1987, he opened up his doors, and he's been working on domestic and import, both gas and diesel. He has ASE-certified technicians. He believes that an excellent repair facility is all about the end result, and that's two things. Your problem solved, and your total was under our estimate. So that's how Kurtz Auto runs. He's at I-17 and Bell, the northeast corner of I-17 and Bell in Phoenix. If you live in that area and you don't already have a shop, or if you work in that area, may I suggest Kurtz Auto at I-17 and Bell. All righty. When it comes to reviews on the internet, I understand as a businessman that empowers people who may not have, may not want to be forced into a confrontation, and I understand that. And in fact, I think if I went to a business and complained and they got crappy with me, I might even leave them a bad review. This all brings up a review that I found yesterday about our shop. And the review talked about a gentleman who said this: I took it in for some carburetor work and they charged me $1,000. And then I took it back in when it started running badly and they told me I needed a $1,000 carburetor. Well, none of that is true. And unfortunately with reviews, it takes a while to kind of track down the customer because obviously, you know, his name might be Tom W. And so you have to look through all your W's, you have to find a Tom, and then you have to figure out what the heck it is. But anyway, I did find it. And it was an 87 Ford motorhome that he brought in, and his symptoms was is that intermittently it would die for no reason, and it had a tough time getting going faster than 45 miles an hour. Well, we replaced the fuel pump. So we replaced the fuel pump, and after we got done, we drove it, and it would do 60, 70 miles an hour. He was with us, and everything was fine, and he left. Now, 4 days later, he came back, and the carburetor was flooding. Now, the carburetor is certainly part of the fuel system, but it's at the, on top of the engine, where the fuel pump in this motorhome was in the back inside the gas tank. So we were able to drive it and see that the carburetor was flooding, and we told him that for $657 we would rebuild his carburetor and fix the flooding concern. And the work order said that he said, I'm just going to continue to drive it and see if I can work it out. Now, it could have flooded because of a piece of dirt in the fuel system. It could have flooded because the new fuel pump has a higher pressure than the old one did, and that this carburetor that was made in 1987, this carburetor couldn't handle the increase in pressure because it deteriorated at the same rate the old fuel pump deteriorated, and at the same rate the old pressure deteriorated, so blah, blah, blah. So anyway, and then he says he had it fixed for $58. So I answered him in a really kind way, and I just reminded him that we had done a fuel pump the first time, and we didn't do any carburetor work. And then he brought it back 4 days later, and we diagnosed it. And I reminded him that the second diagnosis and talking with him and driving his car was for free. We didn't charge him anything for that. And that we never charged him $1,000 on the first repair. He said it was more than $1,000, and he's right. It was $1,014 for the fuel pump, the labor, the diagnosis, all this stuff. And then I said, we didn't bid you $1,000 on a carburetor, but it was $657, and it's written right on your ticket. I bring this up on behalf of businesses all over. I'm going to agree that there's businesses that are tough. There's businesses out there that don't really have your interests in front of their own. But on behalf of the majority of businesses who truly want to stay in business and truly want to serve their customers, when you read these reviews, take them with a grain of salt. I know that you, and you're welcome to go to Yelp and read my reviews. You can go to the Better Business Bureau and read reviews. You can just type in Salem Boys Auto reviews, and you can read them all. There's some people that I couldn't make happy, and I think I've answered all of those people, and I've answered them, you know, to the best of my ability. But there's a lot of issues that there's two sides to this story. I think the worst business is one who ignores those reviews and doesn't answer those reviews, because if you don't answer them, then they become the word of you know, authority. And unfortunately, sometimes that's not right. Everybody knows somebody who just can't be pleased, and depending on the volume of customers you have, you're going to run into somebody who can't be pleased. I had a review 100 years
caller ago, Corky,
who we put a set of shocks on, and he didn't like the shocks. And so I worked with the rep, and we gave him four different options. We'll take them out. We'll put in nicer ones at our expense. We'll put in this other brand that you talk about at only the difference in cost. And we made him four offers, and he picked number two. And then we said, fine, we'll accommodate number two. And then he changed it to, no, I don't want any of these. I just want this. And so we said no. He filed a complaint at the Better Business Bureau. We went through that process, and the Better Business Bureau says, we think that his offers were valid. He offered you to solve the problem that you had. But anyway, so he continues to hound me. But you can tell when he writes a story because it's like 47 pages long. And I'm going to tell you from a arbitrator point and a business point of view this. Your complaint can't be more than 2 pages because you're going to lose everybody's interest when we're going through 7, 8, 9 pages of typewritten text. You just start at the beginning and start with what your original problem was, what they did, and then how come you're not satisfied. And that goes with a washing machine salesman or a landscaper or whatever. Just, you know, talk about the situation. But we don't need to know that you talked to your mom and then your father called this guy and he said this, because none of that means anything. Just give us the facts and make sure you give us the paperwork, and that helps out. So, Corky, good morning, Bart. Corky, give me your question real quick.
Okay, I have a 2004 Tahoe 5.3 V8. It's having some lifter noise intermittently. It's got about 102,000 miles on it. And I have an extended warranty. They've been really, really good. They come out and they can't hear the noise. It comes and goes. And they said, well, we need to hear it before we can fix it.
I can help you with this. I can help you with this. What I want you to study, think on, though I'm going to ask you on the other side of this break, is when does it prominently go, and is it related to the engine RPM? So as otherwise, if you give it the gas, does it go up and down with the engine? Is it only cold, only hot on a hard stop? A hot restart or a cold start only, and has different viscosity oil changed anything? But when we come back, I'm going to answer your question, so you stay right there. I have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We're here till noon talking about cars. The name of the show is Under the Hood. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem here at your service, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to call us, you can. We got a car question. Corky, are you there, buddy?
I certainly am.
Okay, Corky, hot or cold?
It doesn't make any difference. The first time I noticed it, we stopped at a gas station. We'd driven about 10 miles, and it started lifting, making a noise.
Okay. The problem you're going to have is... Is Corky, I know you call it a lifter noise.
Right.
But you don't know that. And I can tell you right now that a broken flex plate, an exhaust leak, a piston skirt slap, and the baffle and the oil pan coming loose can cause a noise. And I'm going to tell you that master techs throughout the valley have, over 28 years of radio, have called me and said, we want you to harp on that more. Because we can't. I mean, I'm a gray-haired guy. I've worked on more cars in 1 week of my life than most people have worked all their life. And I'm having a tough time diagnosing a ticking noise in a car, especially when the customer only wants me to focus on the lifters. And so I want to caution you about that, because think about this. A ticking noise from an exhaust leak is exactly the ticking noise of a lifter. The difference is that the exhaust leak, as the manifold gets hotter, it swells up, and typically the noise goes away. That's why I ask you, cold or hot. A flex plate will change, the noise will change, when you go from neutral to a load gear, drive or reverse. So that will change, but it's not the repetitiousness of the clicking or ticking noise. It has to do with the load of the engine being applied to the flex plate and unapplied to the flex plate. The noise will change. Not the rhythm of the noise. The noise itself will change. So if it's a lifter issue, then all you do is pull valve covers on it when you figure out when exactly it's going to make the noise, and you start touching the lifters. And you'll figure out which, maybe we pulled the stud out of the head. Maybe we need a half turn on a couple of the adjustments. It's going to be easy to figure it out. Let me also suggest to you that an easy way to determine if this is something that's going to cause you problems is to do an oil analysis. And that's under $100. So you change the oil. And at 1,000, you take a sample and maybe you send it over to Empire Machine. They have a good oil lab there. Then you do another oil sample at 1,000, and you look at the two different samples. And if and they're going to measure every metal that's inside your car, they're going to measure that, the presence of that metal in your oil. What happens if you have, you know, 80 parts per million of aluminum on the first one, and then you have 800 on the second one.
That's not good.
That's not good. But it's the same with stainless steel, brass, iron, aluminum, everything imaginable. So an oil analysis will just tell you if we're coming apart somewhere. The other thing you can do is try to take a long piece of heater hose, about 4 feet of 5/8 heater hose, and when the noise is there, I want you to hop out, pop the hood, and stick the end of the hose on the valve cover on each side of the motor. And if it's a lifter or if it's a loose lifter, you'll be able to identify which side of the motor it's on. And then at that point, anybody worth their salt is going to pull the valve cover off, and we have these little gizmos we put on the oil line so there's no oil not spraying all over the place. And we're just going to touch each one of the lifters. Now, typically we'll back them off till they rattle, and then we go anywhere from a half to three-quarter turn tight. So I'm sitting there with my wrench, and I think I've got the one that's the lifter that's making noise. So I'm going to go quarter turn on, tighter, noise is still there, half turn, the noise is gone. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the quarter, and now I'm going to go a full half. I'm also going to put a straight edge across the top of the studs, all the way across the head, because if I'm pulling a stud out of the head, that one will be taller than the rest of them. While I'm there, I'm going to clean everything up, wash the valve cover, make sure the baffles are intact, put it all back together, and that's it. You're going to find out that your aftermarket warranty company is going to say that that's not a repair that's covered, and you'll have the fight if you want to do it. But the good news is to do that kind of work may cost you $200 or $300, and I'm thinking 2 or 3 hours worth of time.
Now, can I just tell you this symptom just comes and goes.
I understand.
And I did pop open the hood. I got my video recorder down there, and I listened to it, and it appears to be on number three
three or five cylinder,
and as it's idling. And then we give it some gas, eventually it goes away. But it doesn't, there's no rhyme or reason when it starts or happens. The technician from the company that I had it at, they have heard it, but the warranty company, which has been wonderful, says, well, we need to hear this noise also, and then we'll authorize it. So I guess the question is, how do I prove to them if it's so intermittent that we can't get it done? And my warranty expires in 10 days.
Well, your warranty doesn't have nothing to do with it, because once we have identified this, they can't say, oh, the time frame's up. You brought it to their attention during the warranty period. I had my transmission on a Suburban rebuilt long after it was warranty, because during warranty time, I had documents that said I got a clunk when I go from drive to reverse.
Right.
And they found the main shaft had snapped the ring on the end of it, and the main shaft was moving backwards and forwards, and they covered it. So
good. It's
you keep talking about this good warranty company. What's the name of it? Because I don't know a single one that I would give that label to, and I deal with those guys every day of my life. Can you see that my underwear's wadded up right now?
Murphy?
I got to ask my staff about it, but I'm going to tell you something. We have to hear it. Well, what's the matter with the technician that heard it? Why isn't his word good enough? What's the matter with the driver who's pointing to 3 and 5, the middle two cylinders on this side? Well, we have to hear it. Well, what does that entail? Well, you have to call our inspector when you get it to happen, and he has to come and hear it. Well, how long is that going to take? Well, I don't know. It'll depend on how busy he is. You call him at 8 o'clock in the morning, he may not get there till 3 in the afternoon. Well, it'll be gone by then. I'm sorry. That's the rules we work under. You're assuming they have your best interest at heart. I'm telling you, every single company I've ever dealt with, and I've been in this business since 1979, every one of them has their interest in front of yours. It's a battle from the very get-go. I had a case the other day where the seals were covered. The seals were covered. I'm going to ask you a question. Is an O-ring a seal? I don't know where you went, but if the O-ring is a seal.
I'm here. You hear me?
Yeah. Is the O-ring a seal?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I would have thought, too, because a seal separates atmospheric pressure from oil, or atmospheric pressure from coolant. Wouldn't you agree? It's a device to keep two things separate. But they voided his entire warranty for this engine that failed because the O-ring failed, and that's not called a seal. It's called an O-ring. And a seal is a seal, and an O-ring is an O-ring.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't fly with the Better Business Bureau. So anyway, if it's 3 to 5, that I'd be pulling the valve cover on 3 and 5. And if it's a valve adjustment, you still got to fight, because a valve adjustment's probably not going to be something that's covered under your warranty.
No, I agree, and like I said, I paid $2,500 for this, and I've got about $6,000 worth of work out of them.
They don't even like you at all. And when we come back, and I'll tell you why, but I got to take a break. Thank you very much, Corky. The lines are open, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 46 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me take care of some business real quick, and let me tell you about Tom at Action Auto. Tom at Action Auto is up at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner of the intersection of I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom's been around since 1983. He has master ASE certified technicians. They get the job done right, and they want to help you as car owners and as their customers to understand why they're doing and what they're doing so that you can make informed decisions. What he's saying with that is that I'm going to tell you these are some issues that you need to have done, and you can do them whenever you want, and here's the money that goes along with them, and here's where it says in your owner's manual, this is where you need it, and so, but none of these are going to cause you to break down or need a tow truck. So you have the opportunity to sit down and digest these over the next 10 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, whatever. Non-confrontational, no pressure. Here's the list that we see that you need to plan for and in priority order. So Action Auto is a great place. I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Corky, on your guy that you said you paid money for it, but you got like $6,000 or something like that out of it. Let me tell you the math of this. You have a $3,000 policy. If I sell it, I get anywhere between 5% and 15% of that. So I get my percentage right off the top. Then the insurance company is going to have to hire an administrator, and the insurance company is going to keep a large portion of that as profit, but they're going to give the administrator somewhere between 40% and 60% of the premium to deal with you. The administrator is going to work off profit, so he's going to do his best to keep you underneath the amount he's given. So let's just assume that they get 50% of your $3,000 premium. That's $1,500. Well, if Corky's out there and he's popped $6,000 worth of repairs that are covered, the administrator didn't make any money, and he's having to go back to the insurance company saying, hey, I'm in the hole here. The insurance company says, wait a minute. But what about Mrs. Jones who paid $3,000 and you got $1,500 and you never had a claim? And what about this and this and this and this? That's what goes on behind the scenes. It's just a big shell game, and they're betting that you're going to use less than what you paid. And some of you use more, but most of you use less. So that's it, Corky. Thank you very much for that. That was an interesting phone call, but I think you're going to find, and here, let me tell you this, if the valve's too tight, it'll backfire through the intake or the exhaust, and if the valve's too loose, it'll be noisy, and the difference between loose and tight is the difference of about one full turn on your ratchet. So it's not going to take much. If you're right, and this is a lifter issue, it's not going to take much to fix it. Harold, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hi, Mark. I got a real easy question for you on tires, but before I ask you that, I was wondering if you happened to see the episode on Channel 3 last night where the woman took her car in for an engine exchange job and a disaster happened whereby apparently she paid $1,000 up front and still hasn't gotten her car back and still hasn't got a new engine. And I wondered if you had been exposed to that.
Yes, and I'll tell you, and I'll say it publicly, I've never asked for a deposit on an engine job. I think that's a huge, big red flag. Now, if you came in and said you were from Texas and you had a Texas driver's license and you were passing through and you want me to put a brand new $17,000 diesel engine in your Ford, I might very well put some kind of a deposit against your credit card or something like that. I'm going to go with your credit card because if I don't deliver, then your credit card company can backcharge me. But as far as paying you cash up front, that has to be a huge red flag. There was one that they had on television a while back where guy's driving his brand new Land Rover. It wasn't brand new. It was brand new to him. It was used. It broke down. The tow truck guy comes along. And he goes, hey, take it over there to so-and-so. He's a great guy. So the guy says, fine. He doesn't even know who so-and-so is, but the tow truck driver is going to get a spiff. He takes it in. He's told it needs an engine. So then, I don't know if it was 3 on your side or 12 on your back or 8 on your side or whoever the heck it was. They go over there, and they talk to the guy, and the guy won't even talk to him, and the car's on a lift. and the guy's paid $4,000, and it's been months, like 8 or 9 months, and the car's still not done. So, and then this shop, you gotta look at the shop, you look at the people, you look at this, and you go, oh my God. So, it's just, sometimes there's people out there that are ready for the plucking.
Yep.
And it's their fault. So, alright, let's go to the tires.
Let me give you an easy question.
Okay.
2008 Jeep Grand Cherokee, I'm getting ready to put new tires on, and I got three recommendations. One was a Michelin Latitude.
Okay.
The other was a Toyo, and the third, I believe, was a Yamaha. And I would like your opinion on it. Now, this car does not get off-roading.
Okay.
It's strictly on-road.
All righty. Well, I can tell you right now, the Michelin is a great tire. I sell a lot of them, and I like them. I can tell you that the four Michelins are going to be between $100 and $200 more than the Toyo.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about a Yokohama.
Oh, Yokohama, okay.
Yeah, and the Yokohama is the B tire. So the Michelin and the Toyo are the A tires. What did you get out of the first set of tires that you had on your Grand Cherokee? How many miles?
Well, it came with the factory Goodyears, and the car has about 40,000 miles on it.
Okay. All right. Well, you'll get 40,000 out of the Michelin and the Toyo, and I want to tell you, I sell both, but I want to just tell you this. When you come to my shop, if you ever come to my shop, you're going to see my wife, my daughter, my son, my daughter-in-law, my mother's car. You'll see every car we own, every shop truck we own, has Toyos on it. The Toyos are made in Atlanta, Georgia, and I've been to the factory, and it's under roof 67 acres.
Mm.
And it does 55,000 tires a day. And they spin and air up all 55,000 using automation. I'm a big fan of Toyo, but it's not because it's because it's made in the United States. But it's a great tire. So if I were giving you good advice, I'd say price the Toyo out the door. How much do I have to pay you for four tires out the door, and price the Michelin and the Toyos? And I think there's going to be $100 to $200 worth of difference on the two packages, and I think the Toyo's a better value, and it'll also be the cheaper one.
Does the Toyo have a model like would they call it something like?
Well, you have three different kinds of Toyos. You're going to have an aggressive tread you don't want. Then you're going to have an all-season tread that's kind of a good snow tire, good water tire, good street tire. And then you're going to have a street tire. So if you don't ever take it off-road, then get the street tire.
Street tire.
And
okay.
If you want the all-season and you go to Payson or you go to Flagstaff every once in a while, or maybe your wife drives through washes and she needs a good tire and water and sand, then get the all-season.
Okay.
All righty. Good luck.
Thank you.
You bet. Jerry, you're up next. Jerry, how can I help you today?
Hi, I have a 94 Buick LeSabre with a 3800 engine, and that thing has got a hiccup on the, and I call it an electrical thing because it'll run down the road in just a microsecond, it'll, you know, and keep on going, even at a little bit faster idle speed, but if it's slow idle speed, it'll die. A couple weeks ago, I went out to start it one morning, and over a period of time, my wife and I, we spun it over about a minute and a quarter. No fire. And I called the tow truck. They came, and it started. We drove it on the truck.
I already know what's the matter with it.
You do?
Yeah. There's a crankshaft sensor on the front of the crankshaft. There's also some magnets that are on the gears. And what we're doing is it's kind of like the set of points on the old cars. So you have a crankshaft sensor, and I am quite sure, I am 99% sure, that there is an updated kit to make your car more dependable. Do you ever have a check engine light come on? Jerry?
No, the dealer, he replaced the fuel pump because they went and pounded on the tank.
Okay.
And I told him, I said, I don't think it's fuel pump because it's just like a hiccup.
See? Okay, well, the fuel pump, when it doesn't run, it doesn't start, and it doesn't run at all. And,
well, that's what I thought.
And so you probably spent between $700 and $900 for a fuel pump?
No, I think it was more like about $450, I think.
Okay. My suggestion is I agree with you. I think you have an electronic problem, and the 94, you have to remember your car is 20 years old. And we had big problems with that 3800 with the crankshaft sensor and the magnet coming off of the, I think it's on the cam gear. So we have to pull the cover and we have to kind of redo something, but you can either wait till it completely quits and the car will crank over but not start, or you can go in there and have somebody do a square wave pattern, otherwise hook an electronic device up and watch the crankshaft sensor work. The line goes horizontal, then it goes up, over, down, and has a tooth. I want you to think that is a tooth. We'll watch all these teeth on an oscilloscope, on a television screen. We'll rev the motor, we'll put it in drive, we'll give it gas, we'll put it in reverse, we'll do it hot, we'll do it cold, and pretty soon we're going to miss a tooth. Pretty soon we're going to have a tooth that looks ugly, and then we go, bingo.
It happens every day, and just driving in all the woods in about 10 miles. It happens every day.
All righty. Well, why don't you just take your 94 Buick LeSabre 3800 and just do crank sensor 94 Buick or 94 LeSabre crank sensor, and I'll bet you have 30 pages of information about the crank sensor and the updated kit that makes it better today. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck to you, Jerry. Thank you very much. And Irene, you're up, Irene.
Yes. Hi, Mark. I drive a Chevy Colorado 2009 for I'm a courier for a school district. So I drive 110 miles a day with about 38 stops a day, anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes approximately between each stop I turn the engine on and off.
Okay.
And this has been going on for maybe a year or so, and it's been to the Chevy dealer once and to the our garage. It goes in about every 2 to 3 months for service. So every now and then I go get in the vehicle to turn it on and nothing happens. The security lock light blinks on and off and the engine light comes on. The battery works, the radio works, the lights work.
Okay.
But I have to sit there for about 10 to 12 minutes and then all of a sudden it'll start right up.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
It's happened about 6 times in the last 3 months.
Okay. I need to ask you some questions. Okay, when you hit the key,
1 minute,
nothing happens?
Nothing at all.
No click, no groan.
No click,
no,
no hesitation when it does finally start up.
Okay, number two, when you turn the key on and the security light comes on and at the same time the check engine light comes off, if you just leave the key on and you don't go to the crank, both of those will probably go off after 3 seconds, yes?
Yes.
Okay, I'm not worried about those. What you're describing is a starter solenoid problem. If you go to my website, marksalem.com, and if you print out FAQ 28, I'm going to ask you to watch the headlights. So when you park, I want you to park against something where you can see your headlights. Park against a wall. Park against another car. Wherever. When you hit the key and nothing happens, turn on the headlights. They should be white and bright. Then you hit the key and they don't dim. That means that it's either not in park or the starter solenoid's bad. You wouldn't change just the starter solenoid on your Colorado. It comes as a package, and you are best served by having them do a starter and a solenoid. But stay right there. I'll pick you up in just a minute.
Did you know by...
General purposes only.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We've got callers on the line, but right now we have 3 lines available, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you real quick about transmission repair. If I was a bad guy in the transmission business, I would look at your transmission that needs an overhaul, and I would take it apart and identify the component, or maybe a pair of components, that failed. I would look at the rest of the transmission, and I would say to myself, I need to build this just so it'll get past the warranty. So if I'm going to give you a 1-year warranty, I'm going to look around and say, well, this will go past a year, this will go past a year. And so I'm only going to replace the components that failed, that caused your transmission to fail. I'm going to rebuild it and give it back to you, and I'm going to charge you premium dollars. Here's the flip side of that coin. The flip side of that coin is I'm going to go in, and I'm going to replace everything that's worn. I'm going to replace everything in the transmission. I'm going to measure everything in the transmission, and I'm going to do my best. I'm going to look at the odometer and say, oh, you got 110,000 miles out of this transmission, and I'm going to do my best to build you another one that will go another 110. The difference between the good guys and the bad guys is seamless, but here's the answer. a detailed estimate. Detailed. What parts and what labor equals the number you're giving me. And that's why Quality Transmission in Tempe is on my list. Because they do that. They don't just throw a number at you. If you want, they'll give you a detailed and they'll tell you everything they're putting in it. If you ask everybody for a detailed list, you'll separate the good from the bad. Quality Transmission, located on McClintock, north of University in Tempe, a good guy. Okay, Irene, are you still there? Let me just explain something. If the battery is bad, the headlights will come on white and bright, and when you hit the key, the headlights will go out completely and then come back on ever so slowly, starting with yellow and then growing to white and bright. That's a bad battery or a bad battery connection. Okay?
Well, it just had a new battery put in not too long ago.
But that doesn't eliminate the connection, does it?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just giving you examples. That's what FAQ 28 is all about. If the starter is bad, the starter motor itself, the headlights will go from white and bright to nothing immediately, but the minute you let go of the key, they'll come back as fast as you can see, white and bright. That's a starter. A solenoid, if there's a click, you hit the key and there's a click, but nothing happens, the headlights will dim, the intensity will drop just a smidgen, and when you let go of the key, they'll come back on. What you said was there's no noise.
Right.
I don't care that the radio's on because the radio needs 1/100th of the electrical condition of the battery.
Okay.
So, you know, the radio is not a good comparison. The starter's going to draw 200 amps. The radio draws 1 amp. So that's the difference. So what you said, though, is no noise says to me that we're sending electricity to the solenoid, but the solenoid is not engaging the starter. So if – do you know where the starter is on your Colorado?
Do I know where it is? No, I don't.
Okay. Because if it were somebody that was interested, I would give them a hammer, and I would say, when it happens, get out, get down on one knee, hit the starter a couple times with a hammer, get back in, and if it starts every time you do that, then I've diagnosed the solenoid as being defective. But in your particular case, I'm quite sure, based on just on this, I hit the key, no noise, nothing happens. But then later, it starts fine. That's a solenoid problem as far as I'm concerned. Okay?
Okay. All right.
Good luck to you.
All right.
Thank you very much, Irene. John, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Two summers ago, I did in my 2008 Chevy HHR panel, and the air conditioning wouldn't work. And the analog temperature gauge is flat, and the digital display for the temperature just has 3 bars across it.
Okay.
So I ran it into a place, and they thought it was the computer module. This was on a weekend. So that Monday I went up to the dealership, and they finally decided it was a thermostat.
Okay.
So they replaced the thermostat, and that cured it for about a day, or about a week. And then they put another one in, that cured it for about a week or two, and then it did it again, and they were going to put a third temperature sensor in, and I said, you know, I don't think so, boys. And so they got on the national service advice thing from GM, and it came down to change the engine coolant temperature sensor.
Okay.
And that fixed it. Up until about 3 weeks ago, it's wintertime, so I didn't have my air conditioning on, obviously, but I cranked the car up, and the analog gauge is flat, and the digital display is 3 bars again.
And this is your climate control panel?
No, this is the engine temperatures, the engine sensors.
Okay. Well, the coolant sensor and the sensor to talks to your gauge are 2 different things.
Well, I understand that. But what they're saying is that if the engine temperature doesn't come up to spec in the specified time, that the computer will then not allow the air conditioner to turn on. And that seems to be the case, because that's what, when they had the initial diagnosis.
Okay, that's not true. And here's why. If we lose contact with the coolant sensor, then the signal to the computer is minus 44. And I agree that the air conditioning is not going to come on if you're asking for 60 degrees and it's already minus 44. So, we're talking apples and oranges here, but let me give you the best advice I can give you. It doesn't really make any difference what they say. You look them in the eye, and you say, you know what, you can do anything you want, but I'm only going to pay you for the part and the labor that fixes my problem. You're too deep in this repair. You're trying to help them make decisions, and you're going to end up paying for their guesses and mistakes. You need to look them in the eye and put their tell them, I'm holding your feet to the fire. You're a professional, buddy. I don't care what you do. If you have the skills to fix my car, then fix it. If you don't have the skills to fix my cars and you're going to guess, then we're going to guess with your money, not mine. That's okay to say that.
Well, it's this has been under warranty.
Okay.
I bought the car with very, very low miles on it.
What difference does this make?
Well, I didn't pay for any of this.
I know. So at this particular point, give them the car, tell them what the problem is, and they're going to fix it. And if they hit a home run, fine. And if they don't, you're going to have to go back. But as long as you're not paying for it, then I guess there is some trade-off. But you can't go tell them that the guy on the radio said this, because if you're missing the gauge comes off of a different sender. The coolant sensor talks to the computer. The coolant sensor tells the computer what's going on. And if it sees cold, if the engine temperature is cold, why would the air conditioning not come on? Unless the engine temperature says a minus 44. And when you disconnect the sensor, the default is minus 44. And so then it goes, hey, if it's minus 44 outside. But another thing is your HHR has a thermostat or a temperature sender that tells it about the ambient temperature in the car. And if you're asking for 60 degrees on the air conditioning, but the ambient temperature is told is 40, then the air conditioning's not going to come on. We have equipment we plug into your car, and we talk to all those sensors. When I start your car up first thing in the morning, John, okay, I have five different temperature senders. I'm going to turn the key on. I haven't started the car. It's in your garage at 68 degrees. What should the engine temperature be, John?
At 68 or less.
At 68. What's the interior temperature supposed to be?
Probably the same.
Well, and the tire temperature is the same, and the transmission fluid is the same, and the engine oil is the same. How hard is that? How hard is that? Have I not just checked the effectiveness of every temperature sender in the car? And you know what else? We have an intake air temperature. And that tells us what temperature the air is that's coming into the engine, and it'll say 68 degrees. How hard is that? You're dealing with a dealer on this?
Yeah.
Okay, well, don't say nothing. Please don't say nothing. I think perhaps if you really think that they're struggling, I think perhaps you should take it someplace else to another dealer. That's what I would think I would do. If you're getting a lot of guessing, and gosh, we'll try this, gosh, we do this. And when we start talking about we're going to go on this big thing on the internet and it's going to tell us how to fix your car, you know, I'm going to tell you what that really means. That really means is we don't have a damn clue on how to fix your car. We're going to go see what everybody else guessed at, and we're going to try their repairs. That's what it means.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, good luck to you, buddy. Thank you very much, John.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. All righty. And
caller Sean.
602-508-0960. Sean, you're up next.
Hey.
Hey.
Mark, how you doing? I sent you an email a couple weeks ago about a 07 Mercedes SL550.
Yes.
A transmission problem.
Uh-huh.
I finally got some time to call you on the air. So my original thought was that it was the ABS, because the tire was locking up as I came up to a stop, and then I would have the problem with it slipping. But it turns out that's not the case at all. It's just after extended drive, it seems to be not downshifting at all. Even if you put it in manual and, you know, move it down all the way to first gear, it still is, seems like it's locked in fifth or seventh in this case. So the only way to kind of cure it that I found is to shut the car off and start it again.
2 minutes.
And then then it runs fine and it's not slipping. It behaves like it.
You know, Sean. I mean, what I hear you saying is you said a symptom was that it's locking up a tire or the tires when you're stopping.
Well, it is what the first thing that I kind of correlated was basically as I came up to a stop, and if like the front driver's side tire was on a little bit of a dirt or something like that, and it kind of slipped a little bit.
Well, I'm going to ignore that. Ignore that.
Ignore that.
Don't bring that up, because you explained it perfectly. If the one tire has less traction than the other tire, then yeah, ABS is going to activate, because when you apply the brakes, it's going to apply the same pressure to both front tires, but one of them's on ice and one of them's on pavement, so we're going to slip the ice, and when the ABS control is going to take, so forget that. Let's put it in real simple terms. The car's not downshifting appropriately when you're coming to a stop and you can't manually cause it to downshift. Is that it?
Correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
Okay. And then you turn the key off and you turn it back on. You have an input somewhere in the Mercedes that the computer has lost. If the computer lost track of the speed of the vehicle, it wouldn't know when to downshift, because it watches engine throttle, engine load, and speed. So it looks at the chart, and at 40 miles an hour, I should be in third gear, and then at 28 miles an hour, I should be in second gear, and then I should first gear, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's lost, and when you turn the key off and you turn it back on, the computer takes another snapshot picture and says, oh, there you are. So this is really pretty simple. Somebody just has to hook a scanner up to it and go out there and drive it and find out which one of the sensors is not talking.
Right. So I'm looking for a good Mercedes shop in East Valley, Central Phoenix.
Okay. I got to tell you, I don't have one to offer you. I had a Mercedes shop that didn't sign up again, and part of the problem was the quality of the technicians that she had was varying too widely, and she chose to step aside for the year. I did call an East Valley import shop, and he wasn't capable. I called a couple of my transmission shops, and they say no. And so I think you are best served, and this doesn't pain me to say this, I think you're best served by going to the dealer. I think what you do is you write down, this car won't downshift appropriately, and even if I manually downshift it, it won't downshift. It ends up in second gear or third gear at a dead stop. If I cycle the key on and off, then it will be okay from some short period of time. How much is your diagnostic testing? And the answer is going to be somewhere between $75 and $300. And then you'll call me with a part and labor estimate. Is that correct? Yes, it is. Thank you. Here's my keys. That's how you handle it. Okay?
Okay.
All right, good luck to you, buddy. And let me know what happens, because I'm thinking you're losing maybe even a speed sensor or a load sensor, or there's some input to the computer that's missing so the computer doesn't know to downshift. And I'll tell you what Chrysler had this same problem a while back, and I'll tell you on the other side of the break what was going on with the Chrysler cars. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. The lines are wide open, so if you've thought about calling us and asking us a car question, now's your chance. We have five lines available at 602-508-0960. 508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by IMM Auto Service. They've been fixing cars right and caring for their customers since 1972. Their ASA Master Techs work on domestics, most imports, but they specialize in Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles. So those of you with Volvos, Saabs, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos, which makes most shops struggle for diagnostic purposes, not for maintenance, but for diagnostic purposes, then IMM Auto Service is the place for you. They prioritize your work. They give you a to-the-penny estimate, a detailed estimate, and they give you a 12-month, 12,000-mile warranty. They're in the northeast corner of Tempe, near where 101 and 202 meet. They're southwest along that frontage street, that southbound frontage street. And they're a great place. They're honest, dependable, and David's been around since 1972. That means something in our world, because many shops only make it a year or two, and then they go broke and change ownerships. There's shops in town in the Phoenix Valley area that say that, you know, we've been open 40-some-odd years, but in reality they've had 9 owners in that shop over 40-some-odd years. So that makes a big difference. Sean, I want to talk to you, and then I'm going to get to Bill. I got a call during the break from a friend of mine who says you cannot ignore Sean's symptoms of that one brake locking up on a stop, because that could indicate that that wheel sensor's bad, and that's confusing the speed, because that Mercedes could be picking up the speed off the wheels as opposed to the transmission. I responded to him and I said, thank you for that, but what he said was, is it was a low traction condition where one front tire was in a completely different environment than the other, and he talked about loose dirt. So I was thinking that the loose dirt made the difference. And he says, I think you're wrong. And I said, okay. So, Sean, you have the benefit of two of us in the background kind of arguing your question. And it's entirely possible he's right. He's right that one wheel is given a bad signal. So the computer is looking at the tires and the rotation, and it sees, you know, 21, 21, 21, and 72, or 21, 21, 21, and 9. And it's confused by that. By the cycling the key on and off, you're giving the computer a new set of data, a new set of data. So that's how it works. All righty. Let's go to Bill. Bill, good morning. Phil?
Yes, sir.
Phil, good morning to you.
I just wanted to tell you that Tom at Action Auto about a couple months ago advertised that he has a mechanic that does German and European cars. So I don't know if he still does, but you might want to recommend that to the guy that called in a little while ago.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, and that's Sean, the Mercedes. Thank you for that, Phil. So, Sean, back to you. Action Auto is up at Deer Valley and I-17, the northwest corner. It would be worth your time to call Tom at Action Auto and ask him if his import technician is capable of diagnosing a shift concern on your Mercedes. And that would be worth a telephone call. Many, many times the answer might be, I would like to see that, and I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll look at it for free, and I think I'm quickly going to be able to tell you whether I'm your guy or not, because I just like to look at some of the computer parameters. So how about I do that for free, and I won't start the clock billing you until I tell you. And really, Sean, that's a pretty good deal. I don't know if he'll do that or not, but it's worth a call to Action Auto. And Phil, thank you very much for that.
Well, the other thing is, he says that there's a transmission repair shop that's right across the street from or whatever. I think he said it was somebody that maybe used to work for you that runs it. I don't know what the name is. But.
Okay. Well, and thank you for bringing that up. He's talking about A&S Transmission. Now, A&S Transmission is Alger and Shelley, or Alger Stowers. And Alger used to work for me in the 70s. Alger was a gas station jockey. Recently, Alger fell ill, and they took him, and I don't know if it was Barrows or Mayo, and they ended up removing a walnut-sized tumor, a non-cancerous tumor, out of his head. Now, I am quite sure, and I volunteered some brain cells for him, but he, like he said, I know more about transmissions than your whole head can hold, and I agree with that. Here's the issue with Alger. Alger is a wholesaler, so he does repair work for shops. And he would prefer not to deal with anyone other than shops, and that's his right. A&S will take in walk-ins every once in a while, and I think Alger's going to be back, and this is phenomenal. He goes from having signs of a stroke to surgery where they pop open his head, take out this walnut-sized tumor, and put him back together, and he'll be back to work in less than 10 days. And to me, that's... And I'm going to tell you, my family and I were praying for all we were worth for Alger for this to turn out good, and we were
blessed
with the response. But A&S is a good transmission shop. He's not on my list, and I'll tell you why. Because he's a wholesale guy. He would prefer to deal with the shops and have the shop in between him and the customer. But when it comes to transmission, Alger, if he's not the best guy in town, he's equally as good as the best guy in town. So that's who you're talking about. And yes, Alger worked for me as a child, as a young man in high school. And I'll tell you real quick about Alger. One day he said to me, I want to bring my Nova in on the weekend and change the automatic and put a standard in. And I just rolled my eyes, and I'll be darned if that kid didn't have it done on a Saturday. And I was so proud of him, because not only did he have to change the bell housing and the transmission and the drive shaft, but he had to hang the pedal underneath the dash for the clutch, because he didn't have a clutch pedal because it was an automatic. When he did that, I knew he was special. And he's one of those kids that has confidence beyond anybody else. The self-confidence that if some man put it together, I can take it apart and I can put it back together. So, but I'm not quite sure Alger would take this Mercedes, but A&S is worth a call, and that's for Sean on his Mercedes. So Action Auto and A&S Transmission. Phil seems to think if you're in the North Phoenix area, those would be good places for you to call, and I agree. All righty. The phone's wide open. All five lines are available. 602-508-09.
Caller Jan is holding on, too.
And Jan is holding on. And Jan, you're going to stay there, please, please, until the end of the break. And I'll be right back with you in about 3 minutes and 20 seconds because it's 20 seconds away from my break anyway. And if I don't take my break when I'm supposed to, Jan, then Jeremy says bad words in my ear. And he calls me names and stuff like that. So I have to hit the mark. And so here's how it works. I'm looking at the clock, and it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Jeremy. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, after 11 o'clock, 34 minutes after 11 o'clock, let me tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Thompson's and Auto Repair and Towing has been in Mesa since 1970. They're actually the second generation of the Thompson family to run this operation. Brian and Thelma, husband and wife, really and truly, if you meet them, you'll understand immediately what I say. Brian and Thelma are just the salt of the earth. They're a fine, both of them are fine people. And if they weren't married, this would be fair. Brian's the kind of guy you hope your daughter brings home. And Thelma's the kind of lady you hope your son brings home. And that's the truth. But they're honest. They're dependable. They have ASE certified technicians. They're going to do follow-up reminders to help you schedule your maintenance needs and stuff like that. So if you live anywhere near Main Street and Stapley, they're just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. East of Main and Stapley, the south side of the road, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Great people, very honest, been around a very long time. All righty, let's go to Jan. Jan, good morning.
Good morning. I have a 2006 Ridgeline that I just picked up. It's got about 150,000 miles on it. So I bought it from, had it new, and he said, you might want to think about changing the timing belt. He said, I think it's past due. I got it right, so that's something I wanted to ask you about. And then also, the other thing I could find about it was the sunroof, when you close it, it closes and the system ratchets up and it's level and then it drops in the back. I get a lot of wind noise there, and I'm sure it's just a body issue, but I wanted to see what your thoughts were on that vehicle in that year and whether I should have that timing belt changed and also what it would take to work on that sunroof.
Okay, on the sunroof, it's really important to know if it's a factory sunroof or if it's an aftermarket sunroof because you're going to go two different places. Body shops, I would call a few body shops and I would say this. I have a sunroof issue. Do you have someone that you trust to either replace the rubber gaskets or to adjust the sunroof? Do you have someone that you could refer me to? Body shops have those people. And after you get the same name from two or three body shops, I think you'll understand that's where you should go.
Okay, gotcha.
Let's get the middle guy out of this relationship. Let's not you take to shop who subcontracts your work. He charges $200. The shop charges you $300 or $400. Let's eliminate that. So you call a couple body shops. And if you want a list of good body shops, go on to my website, marksalem.com, and click Best Car Repair Shops. Click Body Shops and call those guys. They'll tell you.
Great, thanks.
As far as the timing belt's concerned, I would first say look in your owner's manual to see what the interval is, but 150,000 makes me really nervous. I want you to know that this is going to cost you a lot of money, but you can have people that say the belt is $85 and the labor is $300. I want you to ignore those two numbers. Because that's not what's in your best interest. I'm going to have to go into the front of the engine very deep. The water pump's going to be right there. The tensioner is going to be there. The idler pulley is going to be there. The rails are going to be there. The front cam seal and the crank seal are right there. I had to take the upper and the lower hose off, so they're sitting on the bench. I got the fan belts off. It's sitting on the bench. It doesn't make any difference if I put a new belt where an old belt was. It doesn't cost you anything other than the part, because you already paid for the labor. The cam seal, it's 4 hours to go in there. It's $400 to go in there, but the cam seal's just $20, $30, $40 more dollars. All I got to do is zip off the gear, stick my seal remover in there, pull the seal out, put the seal in, put the gear back on, I'm done. So I want you to plan between $800 and $1,200, and I want you to talk to them about what are some other things I can benefit from for this deep of surgery. Radiator hoses, fan belt, cooling system flush and service, and all the components of the timing belt that move and control the timing belt tension, like the tensioner, the spring-loaded or hydraulic tensioner. Then you've got idler pulleys. Then you've got rails. There may be rails. Then you have, like I say, cam and crank seals. So if the cam and crank seals aren't leaking, you can choose not to touch them. Or you can say, I want you to replace them. So it's up to you. Those are decisions that you should be making. But I am nervous that you're 150. That makes me very nervous. I would think that that would have been done in the 100 to 110,000 mile mark.
Okay, gotcha. And then as far as I'm in Southeast Chandler, shops down here, just go to your site and they're listed?
Yeah, I don't really have. You're going to have to either come into Mesa or you're going to have to go west. I have a big void in Chandler.
One minute.
Looking at my stuff here, I've got Beyer Motor Works is in Chandler, but Beyer Motor Works BMW, he focuses on the BMW line.
Right.
North of you is Schumann's Auto Clinic. He's up on University and Price. And do you have a shop that you like?
You know, I don't. I'm new to the area.
All right. Where do you work?
I work for myself.
Okay.
I'm based out of Chandler.
Okay.
So, but you know what? Shooting up to Mesa is okay. I live just off of Riggs and Alma School, so okay. Down in the Sun Lakes area.
All right. There's another shop, and I'm gonna tell you and admit to you in advance, it's mine at Warner and I-10.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I'm Warner and I-10. Schumann's is up on University and just west of the 101.
Sure.
And then you got Thompson's, who's at Stapley in Maine. So I'm triangulating you.
Okay.
I don't volunteer my shop very often because that's not what I'm all about. But in your geographical area, and because you're new, and because you don't already have a shop, and you're
right.
Self-employed, I can't give you anybody other than those three. Okay?
No, not a problem at all.
Okay.
As far as bringing it up, just call and make arrangements, come in and get it looked at, and chat about it further after that.
Yep, you can call and make an appointment. They'll ask you if you're going to wait. You tell them yes, and just tell them I'd like you to bid the timing belt. But between now and then, look in your owner's manual and find out what the interval is. And if it's 70 or 80 or 90 thousand, then I need you to drive it real slow and no jackrabbit accelerations all the way there. Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay.
One question I do have for you. I was just curious. When that thing lets go, does it just trash the engine?
No, there are two kinds of engine: interference, which means the valves come to a stop and the piston trashes the valves, or a non-interference engine. And I would have to look in a book because so many, more than half of the motors out there have timing belts. I don't know what is interference and what is not. If you have interference motor, there's a 50% chance you're going to have valve damage, and that $800 to $1,200 bill I was talking about is going to double easy. Double easy. We're still going to have to do the front, but now we have to do the top. So we're going to have to take the head off and replace all the bent valves. That's something you don't want to have happen. But just drive it sensibly. Drive it, put a hot cup of coffee between your legs with no lid, and drive it to the shop. Okay?
I can do that.
Okay.
One last question if you have a second.
Sure.
This car, this is a pickup, and you know I use it a lot. I don't use it haul a lot of stuff, but I want to keep it until the wheels fall off of it. So I just bought it to be my last pickup. The reliability on these vehicles pretty good? Because that's what I heard.
I'm going to answer your question on the other side of the break, so hang on, and we'll be right back, okay? Welcome back, everybody. It's 46 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm Mark Salem, and every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here talking about car and car repair. And let me tell you about Car Repair Place over on 38th Avenue and Indian School. Larry Harker's Auto Repair has been at 38th Avenue and Indian School since 1967. That's the common denominator in all the shops in my best car repair shops list is that we've been around a long time. And the idea is that we know what we're doing and we treat you fairly, and that's the difference. That's why we've been around a long time. So Larry Harker's has fast, affordable services. They are absolutely exquisite on auto electrical work diagnostics. So anything electrical and anything with respect to a drivability problem, a check engine light, or where we have to do some diagnostics as far as why is this code here, Larry Harker's and Bob are the really good guys. They handle all areas of auto repair on foreign and domestic cars, so you can stop by if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, or you work near there, then please try Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Alrighty, we're going back to Jan real quick. And what did Jan ask me, Jeremy?
Oh, ask you about that, whether this is just a good vehicle to keep.
Okay, and I can answer that real quick for you. We have we have something in the vicinity of almost 100,000 cars in our fleet that we service. And here's the common denominator. Of the 10 engines we replace, and we probably do maybe one or two or three engines a month. Let's just take 10. Of the 10 engines we replace, 9 of them have been overheated well past the point of I notice steam, okay? they won't admit that I was 7 miles from home and I decided to go for it. So 9 of the 10 have been overheated. So I don't remember the last engine we replaced because of mileage. And the other one, the 1%, is run low on oil where it damaged the engine. So if you avoid overheating, or at least driving them when they're overheated, and you always watch the oil level, then you can expect out of that motor 300,000 to 500,000 miles. And here's the beginning of the end. The beginning of the end is this. When you start consuming oil at such a rate that you foul a spark plug, that is, you are at 90% of that engine's life. You can put a non-fouler in there. You can put a hotter spark plug in that cylinder that's consuming oil, and you can extend the life of that car for another 100,000 miles. But you're not going to be happy putting as many gallons of oil in it as you do gasoline.
So you're just telling me that the normal maintenance is kind of important, right?
Well, not only normal maintenance. It has to do with red on your dashboard being stop. It doesn't mean go another 10 miles home or try to make it to the next exit. It means now.
But if you go faster, you get there quicker, right?
You know, I want to do your car repair.
Thanks. Right. Listen, Mark, I really appreciate your help.
You're welcome, Jan. Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye.
You betcha. All righty. Let me tell you also about automatic transmission exchange, Phil. I tease him a lot, but Phil, when you meet Phil and you listen to his gravelly voice and you go to his shop that's been there since 1968, you'll know why automatic transmission exchange has been around a long time. Phil and his staff are diagnosticians. They are experts in their field. But what Phil really does is if you've got a sand buggy or a hot rod and you want to turn your 2-speed Power Glide transmission into a monster that can handle 400 or 500 horsepower, Phil's your guy. If you've got a sand buggy and you want to take your automatic transmission and take it a level up or two, Phil's your guy. But it doesn't make any difference. Today, my son's truck's there.
Caller Anthony.
So when we look at, does Mark use these people? Yes. Mark uses the same people I'm telling you to use. And not only that is I think there's another Dodge truck that came from up north that's at Phil's place right now as well. So the bottom line is I'm not sending you to places that I don't really believe in and that I don't use myself. Phil does a great job at automatic transmission exchange, and he's on 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. And those of you that go in and out of Phoenix all the time and you use Washington, you drive right by his place if you're coming from the East Valley. Okay, who we at? Who is it?
We got Anthony and then Greg.
Okay, Anthony, go ahead, buddy.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good.
Bud? Hey, I have a question I need your advice on.
Okay.
I have a Chevy Malibu. It's a 99 2.4 engine. The problem is the oil is leaking. Where, I don't know. She's all wet underneath. I don't want to go and have any type of pressure applied as far as to clean the bottom out.
Okay.
So if I have to do it myself, I'm a gearhead, I'll do it myself. But your recommendation is what would be the best type of solvent, degreaser or whatever, however,
okay,
would you recommend instead of me buying like a case of a bunch of stuff that's not even going to hardly touch anything?
Well, you know, I can answer your question. Your question is if I use a self-service car wash, what would you use, Mark Salem, to clean the engine as good as possible? That's easy. I would go buy 4, 5, 6 cans of foaming engine cleaner.
Okay,
and it's going to be in a white can with blue lettering, and I can't think of the name right now. All right, now I'm going to warm up my car good.
Okay.
And I'm going to pull into the self-service car wash, and I'm not going to be there during busy hours. I'm going to be there in the morning, earlier in the evening, late. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to pop the hood, and I'm going to cover the. I'm going to make that engine look like I'm going to shave it. Are you getting my drift?
Yes, I am, definitely.
I'm going to stay away from the throttle position sensor, which is within 6 inches of where the throttle cable attaches to the engine. It's an electronic device. You don't want to get wet.
Sure.
So I want you to draw a circle around where the cable comes from the firewall to the throttle blades.
Okay.
I want you to draw a 10-inch circle around that and don't touch that.
Okay.
Foam that thing down. Shut the hood. The motor's already warm. Wash the outside of the car. Drink a soda pop. And then after about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, pop the hood and wash it to your heart's content. If you want to take a couple of ramps, again, you don't do this when the place is busy because us car wash guys don't want you turning our bays into your personal. But in nights and mornings, it makes so drive the car up on the ramps, take an old overall, or better yet, take your wife, wrap her up in Saran, throw her underneath there, and have her wash the underside. Now, when you're done, you still got to find the oil leak. Yeah. Why don't you just stop by a shop and have them put a little dye in the oil? Drive it for 15, 20 minutes, 15, 20 miles. Come back. They wave a black light, and wherever the oil's leaking, it'll show.
Okay.
All right. Now, what part of town are you in?
I'm in El Mirage. If I don't really have or find an actual service place, if I have to do to my own garage or whatever, I know I'm going to end up putting a lot of stuff down on the ground. I'm not worried about that. And me and the stuff that you recommended, plus my handy garden hose, that should be decent enough.
High pressure, just, you know, you can put your garden hose on a nozzle that's going to, you know, cause the water to come out with higher pressure because it's going to restrict and have a smaller hole.
Right.
You can do that. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
All right.
Any particular places that do dye jobs but, you know, won't charge like an arm and a leg or whatever? I don't even know what they go for.
Okay.
But I understand what you're saying with the light and all that, and that would be the best bet.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got Southwest Diesel, 27th Avenue McDowell. You can call them and ask them. You got S&S Tire out on the west side. And you can call them and say, do you have the ability to put dye in my oil and then do a black light inspection and tell me where the oil is coming from?
Cool.
But if you go to marksalem.com and click best car repair shops, there's I got you covered on just about every place. I'm looking at the map right now looking for El Mirage, and actually I don't see anybody. I see Surprise. I see
Surprise.
Sun City, Auto Dynamics in Sun City, S&S Tire in Surprise, Thunderbird Auto in Peoria, Glendale, Mike's Auto Tech. Those are the guys. Any of those guys can help you.
Yeah, S&S and Tire, I remember.
Okay.
You know, so. All right. And that's in Sun City. Thank you, man.
You betcha. Thank you,
Anthony. I love your show. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Greg, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
How you doing?
Good.
First of all, I want to mention that I've got a 2006 Mustang GT, and it was getting this warbling noise in the back end, and I looked it up online because I'm kind of a computer geek. Figured out what the issue was, but I took it into the dealership, and they were trying to tell me something completely different. I brought it into your guys. They drove it around for a little while, replaced the differential fluid in the back end, put some friction modifier in there, and good to go. So I just want to say thank you on that.
Wow. I didn't expect that ending. Who did you deal with in my organization so I can personally say thank you for making me look like I'm smarter than I am?
I honestly don't remember. It's been about 8 months now.
Okay.
But I recently, more recently, I went ahead and I replaced my struts myself.
Okay.
And I made the mistake, I think, of putting rotary springs on the car just for cosmetic purposes to get rid of some of the wheel well space on it. I'm getting a warbling noise now out of the front at low speeds when, I'm traveling through a parking lot at low speeds. I don't have to be turning, but I notice that sometimes when I'm turning, that's when I hear it also.
Okay.
So I'm wondering about the wheel bearings, or I don't know.
Okay. Wheel bearings will cause you problems. You'll hear a wheel bearing when you're going straight down a road at about 45 or higher, and you make a sweeping right turn or a left turn. The noise will be there on a sweeping left and not on a right or vice versa. Now, I want you to think about this. The axle up front is horizontal. You with me?
Yes, sir.
So when we turn left, which bearing, the outer or the inner, on the left front, the driver's side front spindle, when we take a sweeping left turn, are we going to load the outer bearing or the inner bearing?
It'll definitely be the outer bearing.
Bingo. So if you make a noise when you're going left and it's in the left front, then it's going to be the outer bearing. If you make a noise to the right, then it's going to be the inner bearing of the driver's side and the outer bearing of the passenger side. Now, here's how. Now, this is why we do it. I'm telling you, this is what I charge you $112 bucks an hour for, okay?
All right.
Eddie's going to drive the shop for me. He goes, hey, I got a wheel bearing. Come on. And I go, So I get in the car with him. I'm on the passenger side. I have my feet flat on the floor.
2 minutes.
And he does a sweeping right turn, and he goes, did you feel it? I go, yep. And he makes a sweeping left turn, and he goes, feel it? I said, yep. And he says, okay, we switch places. And now both of us have the chance to put our feet flat on the floor on both fronts, and then we decide who, and the last time we did this, we both agreed that it was the outer bearing on the passenger side, and we were right. So that's what you do. You get your wife in there, you put her feet flat, and you say, feel this. And she goes, oh, no, I felt that vibration much more on the driver's side than the passenger side, and hopefully you did too. That's how we do it. So don't tell
me. Well, I had some other things. The timing belt issue kind of scared me too, because I'm coming up on 140,000 miles, and it's never been done in my car.
What motor you got?
It's a 4.6 liter.
Okay. If it's got a timing belt, then you're way past due, and you need to have that done. And the same applies to you as Jan that we talked about on the Honda Ridgeline.
I believe it has a chain.
If it has a chain, then there is no service to it. You don't do anything till it starts slapping the cover, and that's a noise you'll hear and you'll see. So you don't do anything. There's nothing. Okay? All right. Thank you very much. And, Steve, I can't get to you because I don't have enough time, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go in my office after I'm done, and my email is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. You give me your call number, and I'll call you and take your question off the air because I know you've been waiting, and I feel bad I didn't get you. So, Steve, you email me at mark@marksalem.com right now or in the next 5 minutes, and I'm going to go sit there at my desk while I do some work. And because actually I'm in my office right now. It's right here in the same building. So anyway, and Greg, if you would call me and email me and tell me about your work order number or what your last name is, I'd like to compliment my staff, whoever took care of your problem. I always want to tell them when they do a good job. So you could help me as well. To everybody else, if you got a car question, mark@marksalem.com. I'll see you next week.